And good morning, everyone. It is just a few seconds before 9 a.m. and you are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Democracy in Motion with host Lisa Loving. And it will be followed at 10, as almost always, with Chris Andre, who hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints. And at 11, it's the Digital Divide with host Rabia Yemin. She devotes the hour to the life and the works of Marshall McLuhan. Thanks, KBOO members, for your supporting your community radio station. If you're not a current member, you can become one. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate today.
Tune in to the podcast Probable Cause This on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/probablecause. On this podcast, I look at the top stories on the lack of accountability for police and public officials in Oregon and across the country. That's kboo.fm/probablecause for a weekly roundup of stories on holding our public officials accountable to we the people.
Should it be harder for landlords to evict their tenants for no reason at all?
Should safe and healthy homes come before the interests of private investment?
Is the rent too damn high?
If you answered yes to any of these questions, join us for the next Portland Renters Assembly.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of the Portland Renters Assembly, a gathering of people united by the burden of rent and committed to housing as a human right.
The next two assemblies are on Sunday, July 12th, from 12 to 2 p.m. at the North Portland Library, with speakers on how race intersects with gentrification.
And on Wednesday, July 15th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Colonel Sumner's Park, with speakers on community organizing and mobilizing.
Tell your story and join the conversation. For more information, go to kboo.fm and click on Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Democracy in Motion. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. This week, the nonprofit Women Donors Network's Reflective Democracy Campaign issued a groundbreaking report showing white Americans hold 95% of elected prosecutor positions nationwide. The report is called Justice for All, and its findings were reported from coast to coast. Why are candidates for these elected positions so often running unopposed? And how can we change that landscape? We're joined today by Benson County Prosecutor John Haraldson. He's the vice chair of the Oregon Commission for Hispanic Affairs. And we're also joined by Andrea Steele. She's the founder of Emerge America, which has a piece of this report, and this week announced an equally groundbreaking campaign to persuade more women to run for law enforcement positions. We had also hoped to have Brenda Carrazy Carter from the Reflective Democracy Campaign as well, but technical difficulties stymied us yet there. Andrea, I wanted to start with you. What did you find to be some of the most remarkable aspects of the Justice for All report this week?
Well, this is something that I think those of us who are working in this movement to try and achieve a more representative democracy know in our gut. We know that our leaders are not reflecting the population. But what this report, I think, you know, the facts, you can't argue with facts. And I think that's why I'm so pleased with this report, because, you know, the statistics show that we definitely do not have a representative group of people doing these very, very important jobs. And I was quite stunned by the 85% number. I did not know that number. And as somebody who founded and runs a nonprofit dedicated to recruiting, training, and providing a network for Democratic women interested in running for office, this is really a challenge to us to make sure that this number goes down significantly in the near future.
And that's the percentage of prosecutors that are male, 85% or was it 83%?
Those are the ones who go run unopposed.
85%. And I wanted to bring you in, John. What is a prosecutor? What job are we talking about? Can you describe your job?
Sure. I guess I can give you the long answer or the short answer. The prosecuting attorney's goal really is to achieve justice, and that justice should be achieved through the truth. So the district attorney or prosecuting attorney is responsible for the review and prosecution of all crimes arising within their jurisdiction. They do have a number of other responsibilities that we don't often hear about because so much is depicted about prosecuting attorneys on TV that the less exciting responsibility is not necessarily depicted as prime time type of topics.
It's true. And for listeners right now, you can find out more. If you are listening and you want to see this report, go to www.wholeads.us, right? Who leads us? I think that's pretty fascinating. And just, I want to flag a few more facts from that report. It's actually really easy to access on the internet, and even kids would basically understand the points made here. I have to say, even kids would understand this. So Justice for All shows that white Americans hold 95% of elected prosecutor positions. I'm reading from the report. Building on our previous research that tracked the race and gender of 42,000 elected officials from the federal level to the county level, in our new Justice for All project, we looked at the 2,437 elected prosecutors around the nation in the summer of 2014. And we found that 1% were female prosecutors of color, 16% were white female prosecutors, 4% of prosecutors were males of color, 79% were white males. And so overall, prosecutors of color, 5%. And, you know, also, I think that the report did a pretty interesting job of highlighting a couple of really important recent judgments that it's possible were affected by this issue. One of them was the decision to not prosecute the shooter of Michael Brown. Another was this fascinating case that I think a lot of people have never heard about, where a woman who had an abortion basically was convicted of infanticide, which shocked me because to me that sounds like something that the Taliban would do. I don't want to mix my metaphors here, but I was very surprised by that. And I want to go back briefly to John, too, and say, John, so this report was as of, 2014. How long have you been in office there in Benton County?
I have been the district attorney for Benton County since the beginning of 2007.
Okay.
I've been a criminal prosecutor for 27 years.
And you're the first Mexican-American district attorney in the history of Oregon.
Correct.
I wanted to ask you a few questions about what it's like when you run for office and how can we persuade more people to run for office? But then when I was speaking to you yesterday, you basically showed me that this equation starts way before the election itself. Can you talk about that a little?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, really first I want to underscore the value of the report because it really inspires an important dialogue concerning not just elected positions, but across the board with power paradigm in the United States and in each of our states, whether or not the people who are being served by a government agency or by the private sector are truly being represented, because the reality is that we who serve the public are really an extension of our public. Now, the challenges that we face, and I think the report really inspires this discussion, is that we really can't talk about the representation of elected district attorneys or prosecuting attorneys without considering what the percentages look like with respect to the lawyers. For example, in the state of Oregon, lawyers of color in the state of Oregon are at about 7%, which is about a third of the demographic population. So when we ask ourselves, what are we doing about increasing diversity among lawyers? That's an important question, because ultimately you have to be a lawyer to run for district attorney. And so that's an important piece. Also, to take another step back is, what do our numbers look like at the university level and then at the high school level? We do know that Oregon, for instance, unfortunately, has the lowest high school graduation rate in the country. And our students of color are at the bottom of the bottom. And so the question then becomes, what are we doing to empower our communities so that we have better representation in our schools and thereby in our workforces, so that there are more people having the opportunity to become involved in these elections? And I agree that voting is crucial at the school board level, at frankly city council, at every single level, because it has an impact on the manifestations that we see in terms of what our prosecutors look like.
And if you just tuned in, this is Democracy in Motion. I'm Lisa Loving. We're talking about the important report that came out this week called Justice for All, which looked at the lack of racial and gender diversity in prosecutors, and also known as district attorneys, the people who kind of decide who gets charged with a crime. And we're with Benton County Prosecutor John Haraldson. He's the vice chair of the Oregon Commission for Hispanic Affairs. And we're also with Andrea Steele. She's the founder of Emerge America. And she is the you are the former director of the Northern California Office of Human Rights Watch. So you know
That's
a few
correct.
Things about these issues as deep as they go. Andrea, how do these issues shake down for women, the numbers of women that are attorneys? And can you talk about the new campaign that you guys are launching this week?
Sure. Well, I certainly appreciate John's comments. You do need to have a certain number of attorneys in order to be able to recruit. And that's not our problem with women, because we know that around half of the graduates nowadays in law school are women. So our challenge at Emerge America, where we are trying to recruit, train, and provide a network for Democratic women for running for office, and I have to tell you, one of our very best affiliates is our Emerge Oregon affiliate. So I would be remiss if I didn't say that if you are listening to this show, you are interested in running for office, whether it's to be a prosecutor or any other level, you can go to the Emerge Oregon website, and our applications are up, and you can apply to our next program. But we do have enough women lawyers in this country. We just need to get them running for these positions. And it's challenging on a number of levels to get women running, but we've found the secret sauce. Number one, you have to ask a woman. So once again, any of you who are listening, if you know a great woman lawyer who you think would make a great prosecutor, call her up after you listen to this radio program and say, you know, I think you would make a great prosecutor. We have to ask women. We also have to provide them with training. And once again, when you ask that woman, you can say, and I know where to send you. So just because you're a lawyer doesn't mean you know how to run for office. That takes a whole different skill set. And then you also have to provide them with support. So once that woman is running, make sure that they feel supported by a community of people who really are invested in that person. So in our case, we have launched this effort. It's part of our national Follow Hillary's Lead campaign. So we are really trying to get women excited, Democratic women excited, about the fact that we have a woman at the top of the ticket. Imagine seeing your name on the ballot with Hillary Clinton. That's what we're saying to women. That's what we want to say to women who potentially could run for prosecutor in 2016. And so we are reaching out all over this country to try to get women to step up to the plate. Women of color, we desperately need more women in these positions, because a lot of the issues that affect our constituents are related to, you know, family issues, women's issues, so we need more women at the table.
And now that you said that, there's a story that came out last week in the New York Times that just blew my mind. The prosecutor in Louisiana, his name is Dale Cox, he's the district attorney in Caddo Parish, Louisiana. He basically presides over more... I'm going to read the first sentence from the New York Times. In a much-discussed dissent from the Supreme Court's ruling on lethal injection last week, Justice Stephen G. Breyer laid out the problems as he saw them with the death penalty. Among them was arbitrariness in application, including how simple geography can determine whether someone convicted of murder would be sentenced to death. Caddo Parish in northwestern Louisiana is one of those counties. Within Louisiana, where capital punishment has declined steeply, Caddo has become an outlier, accounting for fewer than 5% of the state's death sentences in the early 1980s, but nearly half over the past 5 years. And this prosecutor, basically, he's saying that revenge is a justification for putting people to death. Mr. Cox, he's 67 years old. He's the acting district attorney who secured more than a third of Louisiana's death sentences over the last 5 years, has lately become one of the country's bluntest spokesmen for the death penalty. He has readily accepted invitations from reporters to explain whether he really meant what he said to the Shreveport Times in March, that capital punishment is primarily and rightly about revenge, and that the state needs to, quote, kill more people, unquote. And yes, he really meant it. I have to ask you both to comment on that. It seems extreme, but can you... I want to go first to John. John, you must have seen that story. What was in your mind when you saw it?
Well, you know, I think I have to be careful in terms of making... comments with respect to the philosophy of someone who I've not sat across the table to discuss. Certainly the comments that you have shared, you know, are, you know, pretty provocative. But, you know, this is a very, very complex issue that is certainly far more complicated than reducing it to a soundbite to say the death penalty is about this or that. Mm-hmm. I guess I have to confess that I examined this issue through the lens of Oregon, and Oregon and death penalty process here is going to be have some difference in terms of both culture and how those processes carry out. I think we have to be really, really careful in getting into a discussion with regards to the death penalty, because it has very complicated issues. Mm-hmm. One of those issues certainly has to do with whether philosophically a person agrees with the death penalty or not. Second issue has to do with perhaps why, what's the reasoning behind that if the person philosophically chooses to examine it. Third issue is, can we afford it? There are those who argue that it's too expensive of a process and therefore we should not utilize that as a sentence. And so there's a lot of layers to that, and so while I think that it's very, very important, certainly for purposes of this program, I do want to touch on a piece that it was inspired by Andrea, and that is related to encouraging women to seek out the prosecution positions, because we have many talented female prosecutors who could certainly become great elected prosecuting attorneys. We also have excellent prosecuting attorneys that are very worthy of note. In the United States, the two largest prosecuting attorneys' offices are Los Angeles and Chicago, and each of those offices is led by a female of color. Anita Alvarez in Chicago, and in Los Angeles, Jackie Lacey, the Attorney General for the state of Oregon is Ellen Rosenblum, and certainly the Attorney General for the United States, Loretta Lynch. And I share that not as you know, to say that that means that the numbers are what they should be, but certainly that it should serve as an inspiration for women who wish to have a career in prosecution to become elected prosecutors.
And John, if I could just follow up, what I hear you saying is it's easy for us to watch all these shows on television and assume that, you know, it looks like a TV show. You already mentioned that. But these are actually really difficult jobs, and they are a matter of life and death. Am I imagining that?
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, to illustrate what that's like to some degree is that we work with laws that are interpreted by the courts. And those laws change. If you think about it like a set of rules, imagine if you go to work and you have a set of rules that are well-defined that you must abide by in doing your job. And then on the next day you come to work and those rules have changed. And you must expend that energy to be on top of that, to understand that, to recognize that. And that continues. That never stops in a career in the law, whether you're in the private sector or the public sector. The role of an elected, of course, is that you're in a very transparent position where the public gets to see what you do and gets to make a decision as to whether or not they support the way that you do your job. And that will ultimately determine whether you're successful in subsequent elections.
Mm. And, you know, you just said that about how sometimes we assume the law is just like this thing that is like a wall and it doesn't change, although we know objectively that it does change. And I was stunned last year when district attorneys around the Northwest announced new policies that said they would no longer allow sheriff's deputies to incarcerate inmates based solely on detainers issued by immigration officials. Like, to me, that came out of nowhere, and I don't even know who was talking to the district attorneys or how that happened. But it was like, to me, it was like a bolt of logic that came from the sky. I mean, can you talk about that piece a little bit?
Well, there's really a legal basis for that with respect to whether there is authority to hold individuals on the basis of a suspicion that they may not be documented or have legal status. And that was an issue that went before the Oregon Federal Court and was decided that you could not hold someone solely on that you know, preliminary basis that the person was undocumented or did not have legal status, that there had to be more than that to actually be, you know, a formal hold. And the same is true in criminal matters, that in order to be able to hold a person in custody, that you have to be able to meet a legal standard, have a basis for which to do that. And so, to me, it was not a large logical leap.
Awesome. And I full disclosure, my brother is a public defender in Benton County, and he had told me in past years about clients that he had that had speeding tickets, people who were from Mexico and maybe did not have all their papers, or Guatemala or Honduras, and they had speeding tickets, low-level tickets, but they did not want to be bailed out of jail because they were afraid to be sent to the ICE facility. And it goes back to the crucial nature of prosecutors and that crucial job. And I want to backtrack and say, if you just tuned in, this is Democracy in Motion. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and we're talking about the Justice for All report that the Women Donors Network's Reflective Democracy Campaign issued this week. And we're live on the phone with Benton County Prosecutor John Haraldson. He's the vice chair of the Oregon Commission for Hispanic Affairs. And Andrea Steele, she's the founder of Emerge America. Andrea, can I wanted to pull you into this a little bit. As you do the work that you do, and we already said you've worked with Human Rights Watch, you've been working here with Emerge America, looking at issues of how we can create social change in our communities. Have there been any cases that really worried you the most? Or are there cases out there that legal cases, legal precedents even, that you think are really important for people to be familiar with, or things that just shocked you?
Well, I just want to say, in relation to this New York Times article that I did read about this man, Mr. Cox, who really, I mean, to see the number of people on death row in this one small piece of Louisiana go up so much, I hope that people see how much power people in elected office do have. And that's really the message. There are so many people who think, oh, you know, maybe they don't even know what elected officials do. And I think that's what we at Emerge America are always trying to communicate, is these are really important offices. All of these offices are, from school board to city councils, state legislatures. I mean, state legislatures have tremendous power. And these prosecutor positions, I mean, to have the power of life or death. And I think that there are a lot of really good people out there who could potentially fill these roles who might not think about this kind of power. And I would like them to really think, we have a woman, an Emerge graduate in Maine who's a district attorney, who has a great quote. She said, "If not you, then who? When you decide not to run, who are you leaving as our leaders?" In Louisiana, when I read this article, I said, I'm going to get on the phone and I'm going to call and I'm going to see who can we run against this man, because we have to change this office. We have to get him out of power, because if anybody has studied capital punishment, and I'm currently reading this book by Brian Stevenson called Just Mercy, A Story of Justice and Redemption. I highly recommend it. But we know that capital punishment often is there's a lot of racial bias in it, and often we get it wrong. So these are really important issues, and we need really good leaders in these positions. So that's something I'd like everybody to think about.
And I know some women who have been through Emerge Oregon. I know some really incredible women of color. I know a handful of African-American women that have been through that program. And now I have to double back again to this report that Justice for All put out this week. And here's how the New York Times spun it. A study documents the paucity of Black elected prosecutors. Zero in most states, including Washington, our neighbor to the north. And so, Andrea, how does Emerge work?
So what we do is, in each of our states, we have staff who really are on the ground 365 days a year recruiting, speaking at different events, functions, working with organizations, really trying to reach out and get women who maybe otherwise would not self-nominate, do not wake up in the morning and think, I am going to do that. We do have a strong focus on diversity. Over 34% of our women are women of color. That's out of over 1,600 trained across the country. But what we do is we recruit them, and then we take them through a six-month intensive training program. So we teach them the nuts and bolts, again, of how to run for office. Because a lot of women say, okay, well, maybe I'd be interested, but I have no idea how to do that. So we remove that barrier. And then perhaps most importantly, we really do provide a network. Emerge Oregon has one of the most powerful networks. You really do. And I know that when women run there, they feel very supported. They feel like they have a community, which is very, very important. You are a model state in Oregon, and the fact that you have three statewide electeds and they're all three women. And as you mentioned, John, you have a great attorney general who's a woman. Here in California, we have a wonderful attorney general who's a woman of color. She was one of my inspirations for starting Emerge. When she decided to run for DA, and I had been encouraging her for a number of years, she said, okay, I'm ready. How do I do it? And there was nowhere to send her. And that's a real problem, and that's what we work on in all of our states. And this we also have campaigns like Follow Hillary's Lead, and you can go to followhillaryslead.org. You can see some great stories about women running for office in law enforcement positions. And we really try to get the message out to people, to women, try to get them thinking about running for office. So many women say, no way, I would never do that. Are you crazy? And we try to get them to say, well, maybe. So once we get them to say, well, maybe, then we work on them some more and really get them to step up to the plate, because a lot of women do want to contribute to their communities. They want to change their society, and we are trying to help them understand that serving in public office is a great vehicle. You don't have to just run a nonprofit, which is super valuable, or run your PTA. You know, you can also be a school board member or serve in your state legislature. So that's what we're trying to do around the country, is really get women to change their idea of how they create change.
You know, I think, too, that in this country, I think more people might run for office if we weren't so afraid of the media and how sometimes it just comes off the hook and attacks people. And for people to make this decision to become a prosecutor or run for that office, that's a huge vision. That's a really significant sacrifice. And I mean, John, I mean, do you have any advice for people who maybe are thinking that someday that might be their dream? Maybe there are some people right now. I have to say, the Oregon Bar Association, in my opinion, has made really significant strides in my experience over the past, 15 or 20 years in bringing more people of color, more women into the ranks of being attorneys in Oregon, especially people of color. You know, I'm going to say about 15 years ago, I did a story about my colleagues at the Oregon Bar Association, and there was only really a couple handfuls of attorneys of color in Oregon. It seems, if my memory serves, and there's many more now, although more work to be done. But can you, John, what's your advice for someone maybe who's young and they're thinking, I want to make a difference? How would they even begin to think about what kind of training they would need, or who they should, I don't know, have in their community? And if I ask you questions that are too difficult, like, please just say, I'm not here to rock your boat or cause a problem. I'm just trying to bring more information and put it on the table.
Yeah, no problem at all. No, this does not rock the boat at all. great news really is that the Oregon State Bar continues to diversify, and so do the other areas of practice with, you know, of law in the state of Oregon. And so we get to see increasing diversity among those that practice in criminal law and those that work in criminal prosecution. I would encourage folks to consider a career in criminal prosecution. Unfortunately, sometimes there can be negative stereotypes that are created with regards to the police or with regards to prosecution. But the reality is that the better our communities are represented in our law enforcement and in our prosecution and judges and defense attorneys in the justice system, the better that system is going to really serve and build confidence with the, you know, with all communities. One thing that we've learned in studying what's happening across the country is that if you have a demographic conversion that is outpacing the conversion of the power paradigm, that eventually trust will be destroyed. And so my advice to young students who are considering a career in law is to take a real serious look at the value of becoming a prosecutor. And in gaining that experience, one has the opportunity to learn and to develop their craft. I believe that each one of us as a citizen wishes for leaders that are highly competent at what they do. And we need to prepare all of our young people so that they can have the best opportunity to become those leaders. So that's really a crucial piece. This is an exciting time in history when you consider how near we are to demographic conversion. And it's an important time for leaders who are able to use inclusivity and diversity to build strength in our communities and to build that trust. And so I would encourage really to prepare oneself well, find mentors, the mentors are there now, and to work with Oregon State Bar if you have a career interest in becoming an attorney. I know the Oregon State Bar has a number of different programs, pipelines, that are reaching students well before they start law school and when they're in that stage where they're deciding what they might want to do later in law. But, you know, ultimately for young people, I'd say ask many questions. You'd be amazed how, if you just approach someone like me, or if you approach Andrea and say, Andrea, I want to run for office, can you help me? And you'd be amazed at how willing people are to help and to be able to offer support in that respect. So, you know, there's advice that doesn't cost anything, is ask.
All right.
I would echo that, John, and we have a great director in Oregon. Her name is Jillian Shoney. You could call her. She knows everything about Oregon. And I would also add that the media is not as threatening at lower-level positions. Often we do see the media and how they treat Hillary Clinton, Sarah Palin, and others. But there was a great study done by Jennifer Lawless and Danny Hayes out of in Washington, D.C., you know, basically showing that the media really isn't focusing on those lower levels as much. So you don't have to worry about that aspect if you're deciding on running. And don't worry if you have some blip in your past. That also shouldn't figure prominently in your decision to run for office. It's really about whether you want to make a difference in your community.
I think we're talking about within the next generation or two, when population is expected to change and shift here in the United States, and the white population will not necessarily be the majority population. I feel as though it's been a couple years since more than half of the infants born in the United States were not white. And these are hard issues to talk about. Do you two ever, like, sometimes feel a little tongue-tied when you're trying to express yourself about you know, maybe a vision that you might have?
Well, certainly I do. This is Andrea, and I definitely feel like it's a really important time. I witnessed, you know, watched the president's incredible, amazing week that he had when he was speaking, doing the eulogy in Charleston, South Carolina, and I feel like we are at an important point, as John said, in history. And I think that moving towards a more reflective democracy, trying to make sure that our leaders reflect the population because of these demographic changes and everything, it really is critical, because we are facing such unbelievably difficult challenges, whether they're around immigration, the climate crisis. I have children myself, and that's probably the one that keeps me up in the middle of the night. All of these issues really do require such strong leaders, and that is really at the crux of a lot of the problems we're seeing in this country. And, you know, the explosion of problems between law enforcement and citizens really did bring up a lot of these issues, and I think it's probably what forced, what encouraged the Women's Donors Network to do this study. And I am so pleased they did this study, because, again, the facts don't lie. And once you see this, you think, like you said, Lisa, we're not trying to get rid of the white men. We just need to have some more diversity in those leadership positions. And we do need to get rid of people like this Mr. Cox in Louisiana. But there are some really amazing people doing this work that we need to keep in there. But certainly it is a challenge sometimes to articulate the vision of this work and how meaningful it is, and how we all have to get out of ourselves and look and see how can we contribute for this relatively short time we have on the planet. How can we make things better than when we found them? And that's certainly what drives me, and I think it drives a lot of people who are serving in elected office. So if it drives anybody who's listening today, I hope you will consider stepping up to the plate and running for office.
I'd like to follow up on that as well. I think those are excellent points. And I would add this, and perhaps this is a lesson I've learned through my life's journey and through the work that I do, that justice is a product of community and love. In other words, you have a community of people who care. They care about one another, and they care about ensuring that society systems are fair towards everyone. In order to be able to realize that, we need to engage, and that means that all of us that form that community get to engage in a meaningful way. We get to hold elected positions, we get to vote, and we participate in those systems. That's why it's so important that we not only run for office, we engage in the, you know, engage in voting as part of that process that really is the mortar that holds the pieces of our community together. And so when it comes to talking about demographic conversion, that goes right to the heart of talking about justice, to talking about what's fair, really to talking about the core of the values that were expressed in the Declaration of Independence, where it was stated that we have, as human beings, certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And what a beautiful thing if each and every one of us could fully enjoy that. And really, we need to be focused in a constructive way and move towards that goal, and to recognize that through inclusion, through this diversification, that we can be a stronger, healthier, more successful community. It is not a liability, but an asset. It is truly an asset that we perhaps are not utilizing to the degree that we can, and that's demonstrated by the numbers that we see in the studies. But it will require truly engagement from many people, and it has to come from a place of caring, not a place of hate, not a place of fear, but a place of caring.
We're speaking with Benton County Prosecutor John Haroldson. He's the Vice Chair of the Oregon Commission for Hispanic Affairs. He's Oregon's first Mexican-American district attorney. And we're also on the line with Andrea Steele. She's the founder of Emerge America and former director of the Northern California Office of Human Rights Watch. You two are noticing that there's a couple bells I keep ringing with you, right? I see that you have grassroots that are attached to what you do. There are people listening right now that in our community here at KBOO Community Radio, there are definitely some people who don't necessarily like Democrats or Republicans. And some people who just don't trust the electoral process at all. And it seems to me, if you can look at the history of how social change has happened in our state, I feel as if you could see where grassroots organizing, voting, activism, everyone has a piece of it. Maybe one thing doesn't change everything, but using all these tools maybe is what gets us where we want to go. And John, you mentioned that issue of this is what gets me. If we can get everybody on deck, right, in our state and our country, I think that we will have harnessed way more minds than we do now. And there's got to be something good that comes of it. And it makes me wonder, too, how it is sometimes we get in these situations where, I don't know about you, but I know a lot of people who feel really hopeless about voting. And they feel like voting doesn't change things. And also, when people look at what seems like a stranglehold on some of these key positions, governorships, prosecutors, president, all these things, where it seems like diversity doesn't happen, and it seems like there's whole groups of people that never get a chance to lead. You know, sometimes I feel as if specifically this issue about the prosecutors, I bet people feel as hopeless about this as they sometimes do about global warming. And I mean, John, can I ask you this? Okay, now you said the community word, right? And I wanted to ask you, can you talk a little bit about what's on the agenda at the Oregon Commission for Hispanic Affairs, which is led by a wonderful community grassroots activist, Alberto Moreno, who we've had on these airwaves. What are you guys working on now?
Well, first I would have to say that at the core of our work is the equity and really examine examining what our communities can look like through a model of inclusivity and equity. The our focus is certainly on education, on health, on the implications of the lack of resolve with respect to immigration reform, issues concerning justice and how our communities are impacted, recognizing, of course, that our communities, going back to the issue of hope and across the country, are considered decisive factors now in the presidential election. And so that is something that I think fuels a sense of hope that that we can make a difference and we can make changes, but it does take important support for individuals to feel when they are running for office that they're not standing alone. And oftentimes you see folks running for office unopposed, or maybe no one's running at all. It's just left vacant. And I always wonder when I see that on the ballot is, why don't we have more people being engaged? And that may go to, a larger cultural question. I can think about, criminal cases that we have had that have involved, matters that, if you and I were to discuss them today, let's say take a hate crime, in the many years that I've been a criminal prosecutor, I've not seen the community turn out to, watch what's happening in court. I'd say that's a very, very important piece, not to assume that reality is like it is on TV, but go and watch prosecutors in court. Watch them do their job. Watch real life unfold, and let's become educated through that process. My mother, as I was growing up, had a Nietzsche saying for just about every situation that I can think of, and still hear those messages in stages of my life, where one that comes to mind is el saber es el poder, which means that knowledge is power. And knowledge is not just limited to one person, but it's the community's knowledge and the community's power. And we have to be engaged. Our criminal justice system is a transparent system. You can go and watch the trials. You can watch motions. You can watch hearings. You can see what's happening. And that is a very, very crucial point, because if we're not present, the message we send is it's not important to us. But when we are present, the message we send is that we care, we're a community, and we're here to see justice be done.
As you're talking, and something that Andrea said reminded me of this too, this report specifically was about prosecutors, which in Oregon, a lot of times we think of them as district attorneys, the DA, right?
Correct.
But there's other jobs in justice and law enforcement that are elected. And when I'm thinking of voting and I go and I look at my ballot, I see the judges, right? There's judges races where there's many unopposed judges. We actually have a couple of really great judges in Oregon. But I gotta ask you both this, and I'll ask John first. Who should run for judge?
Well, that's a great question. A person who would consider running for judge should have a command of the justice system. That's both the civil and the criminal arena, and really have a mastery of that. They should be someone who is a good listener, someone who is fair. And I know that sounds perhaps trite, but really, if we appear before judges, whether we're citizens or lawyers, that's what we ask for, is we want someone to serve as a judge who will be fair and who will listen. And from there, then, make a decision that is going to take into consideration the evidence before the court and apply the law as it was intended to be applied. And so there's a number of important considerations that take place there. But that said, I do want to touch on one complexity that's an important aspect of justice, an example that I want to make with respect to the perspectives that the value of the perspectives that candidates can bring to the table. Many years ago, when I was first starting out as a young prosecutor, I had the opportunity to be in court where there was a young man who was being arraigned on a misdemeanor crime, and I don't remember what the crime was, but I remember that the young man could not speak English, and he had an interpreter with him. And at that time, the judge arraigned him and gave him the opportunity to plead guilty or not guilty, and then proceed to whatever the next scheduled appearance was going to be. And so when the interpreter turned to translate the question to the young man, he spoke with a pretty thick accent. He, instead of saying, ¿Cómo se declara culpable? Sin culpa, he said, ¿Cómo se declara culpable o sin culpa? And the young man said, ¿Culpable? And which is an inflection which suggests, I don't understand, right? It's, and I said, and the interpreter said, he says guilty, Your Honor. And I rose to my feet and I said, Judge, as officer of the court, I want to note, the court knows that Spanish is my first language. And the response was one of ambivalence. On behalf of the state, I ask that you appoint an attorney so that the young man can have an opportunity to fully understand this process and the case against him and to be able to participate. And the court did that. But I share that example because oftentimes we can have the best of intentions, but an injustice occurs because there is a misunderstanding that is born out of a lack of representation in our process.
We are talking with Benton County Prosecutor John Haraldson. We also have Andrea Steele. She's the founder of Emerge America. We're talking about a really important report that came out this week about the lack of elected prosecutors of color in the United States. And that report is called Justice for All. Andrea, I do want to ask you about your work with the Northern California Office of Human Rights Watch, because I feel as if when we're talking about the nature of why these issues are so crucial, I'm guessing that those are sort of human rights issues. Can you talk a little bit about what are some of the human rights issues in Northern California?
Absolutely, definitely. I had started the first Emerge in 2002, and then I went to work at Human Rights Watch in the middle of this whole journey with women in politics. But certainly I have a strong passion for human rights, which led me to start Emerge in the first place 13 years ago. And when I was at Human Rights Watch, I dealt with many grave issues. I mean, there are a lot of human rights abuses. One in particular I dealt with here in Northern California was the issue of juvenile justice. While I was here, we worked hard to pass a really important piece of legislation to end juvenile life without parole. We're the only country that locks up our juveniles with no chance of parole. It is incredibly inhumane and a terrible punishment that really most societies don't do it because it's not logical. It's not based on science because, as we know, juveniles, their frontal lobe is still developing. And I spent quite a bit of time at a prison out here, San Quentin, with men who were incarcerated as children, as juveniles, and were sentenced either to juvenile life without parole or extremely harsh sentences. And it did really make an impact on me, spending time in prison, spending time with people who had committed crimes and were serving very harsh sentences. And it's made me a very passionate advocate for these issues because, you know, I really think every American should at some point visit a prison because that's where a lot of your tax dollars are going to incarcerate a number of people who, in my opinion, should not be serving the kind of sentences that they are because they're not able to help society, which is what many of them want to do. They want to come out and really help society and make sure that other young people don't get into trouble like they did.
Some of the articles I read about the report about the prosecutors this week, some people did come out and say, well, we don't really know what impact it would have if we had more, I would just want to say more balance in even just candidates for these district attorney, these prosecutor offices. We don't really necessarily know because we've never seen a balanced political system. And there are some people who also, I know that I want to say it was in Policy Mike, there was an article that actually just talked about the general lack of diversity and equity in the electoral system as well. We have definitely seen in this the history of this country more obstacles for people of color voting than for white people voting. But Andrea, and I know this might sound like an obvious question, but what kind of impact do you specifically want to have over time? Do you want different rulings? Do you want more justice? I mean, can we just really put a line under what is your specific goal there?
Well, certainly, and we definitely, our goal with this Follow Hillary's Lead in relation to getting women in running for more law enforcement positions is a number. You know, we want to have a more significant number of women running, and we know that we will see change. And I just want to say that Oregon, you are the model. I talk about Oregon all over the country because many states are not seeing really the success that we are seeing in your state. You in Oregon, you have accomplished, amazing legislation protecting your air and water, expanded access to reproductive health care. You have a statewide paid sick leave. You put a freeze on increases to tuition. You expanded background checks for guns. I mean, maybe in Oregon that seems like maybe normal, but it isn't. So many states are not doing that. And you do have a high percentage of women in office in Oregon. Like I said, you have three women in state executive office. There are eight members of leadership in the state house, and four of them are emerge women Democrats. And I would just say that this is a perfect example of the difference women make. Right in your state, you are seeing it every single day. If we can do this with prosecutors and in the criminal justice systems across this country, we can have states and cities and counties that are running much more like Oregon. I'm jealous of what you all have achieved in Oregon.
And I have to follow that up and say, John, I have to be honest, I'm really embarrassed to say that I didn't even know you existed until I started lining up this show. Is there a place where we should be looking to get information about what's working in Oregon, what's working with equity, what's working with, even the work that you're doing with the Commission for Hispanic Affairs? And how do we get over that cynicism? I feel really cynical sometimes.
Great question. The Oregon State Bar has unveiled a diversity wall, which really gives a fascinating history of how we have really evolved over time. And you can go to the Oregon State Bar and actually see it, or they also have on their webpage a great information that really lays out a history that I think all Oregonians should be proud of. The Oregon Advocacy Commissions are also an important source of both information and action, really, for those who might have an interest in getting more involved in the political process and having their voices heard through organizations. There's also a number of nonprofits that a person can get involved with, as well. But, one of the other great assets of Oregon is that, our statewide population is relatively small. I mean, if you think about 4 million, people approximately, that creates opportunities for folks that are interested in learning more about what we do to make us accessible in that respect. And so there's a lot to understand there. And, I think that, if you look into some of the work that I do in what little free time I do have, I do try to work as much as I can along with my wife, who is truly my better half, at helping develop leadership opportunities for our students. here in Oregon. And that's been a very, very rewarding commitment to see those students graduate, to see those students go on to graduate school and to become leaders in their own right. And it's part of the preparation that I think we all have a responsibility towards in really investing and building for our future. Because those of us that hold elected office, and for all of us that lead in one way or another, eventually we have to turn over the baton. And I think that it's important that we really pay it forward so that the next generation is prepared to take us to the next level.
Hey, you two, that's the end of the show, and I really want to thank you for being with us. Special thanks to our guest, Benton County District Attorney John Haraldson. Find out more about his work at www.oregon.gov/Hispanic. And Andrea Steele of Emerge America. Connect with her at emergeamerica.org. Emergeor.org is Emerge Oregon. And to find out more about this study, go to www.wholeads.us. Thank you again for being with us.
Thank you for having us, Lisa.
Lie down all in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews, stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Friday, July 10th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.